Prepare to be captivated by the business story of the week, hosted by me, Shaheen Shan. Join us on a journey through the twists and turns of entrepreneurial triumphs and setbacks. Immerse yourself in the narrative and witness the magic that turns dreams into reality. This is Business Story of the Week.
Welcome back to Business Story of the Week. I am your co-host, Joshua. And every day, like we do, you know how it's done. We navigate the world of entrepreneurship, business, perseverance, struggle, innovation, success, you name it. And we bring you the best and the brightest and the most successful in their fields every day to motivate and inspire you in your journey. Today, we have executive coach, leadership expert, and award-winning author, Libby Gill. It's a serial career changer. Libby went from heading communications at one of the biggest media giants like Sony, Universal, Turner Broadcasting, to founding a successful 20-year leadership coaching practice. Libby is also the author of several best-selling books, of course, including You Unstuck, The Hope-Driven Leader, which have empowered countless individuals to navigate change and achieve success in their professional and personal lives. Libby, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you doing?
I'm great, Joshua. Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. Libby, I like to jump right into this real quick, but the way I do it, I always ask, where did it all begin? I always ask a journey. Where did the story start for Libby? Did anything happen in your childhood? Maybe something throughout the past? Where did it lead you to becoming the leadership expert and the career changer that you are today? What is the story of Libby Gill?
Oh, well, I did have a fairly challenging childhood. I had a mentally ill parent, an alcoholic parent. It was a lot to deal with. I think I learned to kind of keep my head down and stay quiet, which is not really my nature. And it took a lot of unraveling to get to the point where I really started speaking up, and then I started my career working for a small but very prestigious television company. After, you know, my degree in theater and dance, it was sort of, you know, where do I go now? And so I got a job in the public relations department as an assistant, and then that company was bought by Columbia Pictures, and then it was bought by Coca-Cola, and then it was bought by Sony, but I just, you know, I had this decision of do you dive under your desk and hope that nobody notices you, or do you raise your hand and say, yeah, I can do that? And I thought, that's what I was going to do. And in 5 years, I went from being an assistant to being a vice president and head of the worldwide television group, Publicity, Advertising, and Promotion. And then went on, as you said, to Universal and Turner Broadcasting. So that's kind of where it started.
What a transition also from, like, say, like having this difficult childhood and being, you know, kind of closed off to going to theater. Like, how that's one way to unravel yourself and getting into broadcasts and TV companies. Now, to me, it feels like from your experience at these major media companies and now becoming a coach and an author, can you share any moments, pivotal moments in your career that inspired you to transition into coaching? Anything that happened in particular?
Yeah, actually, there was a moment where I knew I'd sort of played out my career. I was one of the highest ranked people in that field in communications. There wasn't really anywhere else to go. I didn't want to work on the film side. I liked the pace and the rhythm, the speed of television, but I'd done it. And so I was at that point, see, the universe sort of tosses you these challenges. I was offered a bigger job in the organization doing something similar. And I thought, wow, more of the same. And at that time, that, you know, that my organization assumed that I was going to take this big job, because who wouldn't? And so part of that process, I had my headshot taken, you know, in case they did the press release and all of that kind of stuff. And that photo ended up on my desk. It probably shouldn't have, but it did. And I pulled it out of the sleeve. And here was this 8x10 headshot of my face with all the flaws on it, circled by the photographer in red grease pencil, with all these notes about, you know, whiten the red eyes, brighten the teeth, fix the crow's, you know, the crow's lines by my eyes. And I just looked at that and thought, okay, it's time. It is time to move on and do something else. And I really went on a quest to figure out what's next. And that's when I decided what I loved was helping other people grow their careers.
The audacity, first of all, the oh my goodness. But that, of course, it's not, I understand how it must have felt, you know, being thrust into that role and then being scrutinized to that level because it's TV, it's broadcast, it's you know, it's national. But then I feel like it's just as inspiring and motivating to know that you took yourself out there and then you drove head in first into this new role. So tell us a little bit, why coaching in particular? Why leadership?
Right. Well, I was a C-level executive at that point. And I always, what we did, promoting television shows, publicizing shows, launching television shows, I worked on everything. I started with the launch of Married with Children. I ended with the launch of the Dr. Phil show. And it was very time intensive. And you dealt with talent every day. You dealt with the media every day. It could be very stressful. But I loved having this team. I had always had the largest team of the youngest folks because it was just the nature. And so I always felt my job was to help them grow as executives and turn into leaders. And that my people came first. I was very serious about that. And so I wanted to take that part with me into whatever I did next. And I loved writing. I was always the writer's writer and, you know, in the room. And I liked speaking. I liked ideas. It was that combination of what makes people tick and business and putting those together. So coaching just spoke to me. And it was early days. There weren't a lot of people in the field like there are now. And I just studied and trained and thought, okay, I'm just going to throw my hat in the ring and see what happens.
Wow. So it really is quite, it feels like a really smooth transition for you as well. So you handled the big team, you mentored young people, and you, again, like you wanted to see them as leaders of the future, which I know is what your latest book is about. Leadership Reckoning is how you get the young people going, you know, and are they the future? You've inspired many people with your books and to navigate change and achieve their goals. Apart from the talk to us a little bit about your book, but also what is the common, you know, string of advice that you have written throughout these books, throughout your experience, and something that you've always given to your young team and how they've changed their careers?
Well, I think this is a whole other conversation, but I think what I have to offer, and I talk about this when I speak, is hope and tools. I give people a sense of confidence about their own future. Mm-hmm. The fact that if you have a vision of the future that is ambitious, lofty, but real, realistic. So
yes.
Fueled by passion, but grounded in pragmatism. I want to do this thing. I want to live this life. And it may not be easy to get there, but I have the passion around it. And I am aware of the obstacles. May not know exactly what's going to pop up, but no, it's not easy to achieve big things or things that you want to do. So I think I share that and tools and resources. Now, how do I deal with the obstacles, whether they're internal sort of mindset issues, whether they're external competition, training, geographics, you know, whatever they are, financial, and how do I continue to persevere towards that vision? And I think that is the theme through everything for me.
That's fantastic. Such a clear path for everyone to take. And it must have been a joy working with you, having all that, you know, having that kind of motivation, kind of leader to give them the hope that they can change their careers, change their future, take control over their lives. Libby, we need to talk a little bit more about your book, because we talked about that Daruma doll behind you, and maybe we need to talk to our audiences, to listeners, a little bit what that means. But also, again, you've written your books like You Unstuck and The Hope-Driven Leader. Your latest book is Leadership Reckoning. Talk to us a little bit about all those books, and what is it that inspired you to write them?
I think people, there's a cliche, everybody's got a book in them, but I firmly believe that, whether it's for public consumption or for just you to frame your own thinking, it's a really valuable exercise to sit down and think, this is what I believe, this is how it manifests in the world, this is how I can serve and help other people. And I think my books were a lot about that, starting with Traveling Hopefully, which is the one where I sort of sorted out, how do you get past traumas or setbacks in your own life and continue to live the life that you want? That was sort of my coming to terms with, all right, I've dealt with that stuff and now I'm moving on, all the way up to Leadership Reckoning, which I had the good fortune to work on with the folks at Rice University, where they set up a John Doerr, who's an incredible, he and his wife, Ann Doerr, gave a fund of $50 million to Rice University because they felt like we need more leaders in the world. And Rice set up a leadership training. It's more than a program. It's an institute called the Doerr Institute in honor of John and Doerr. And so once they began this program, coaching was part of it, but it was much more comprehensive than that. And now I believe 2/3 of the students, undergrads and graduates, go through that program, which is just incredible. And so I was brought in as a writer to work with them and really sort of codify, you know, how does this work? And what are universities? It was a bit of a call to action to other universities and colleges to say, do you really have a leadership training program? Or is it just a couple of, you know, chats and faculty tea that you do with your students? This is what it means to have a really robust program. And here's how you can do it. They just opened everything up and said, here's what we did. Here's what you can do. And it was really a joy as a writer to be able to work with them as the research was developing and to capture all that with the great student stories. And that's what Leadership Reckoning is. Anybody that institutionally that wants to start a coaching program, it's a blueprint. It will tell you how to do it. And for anyone who's interested in just growing their own coaching practice, there are a lot of really valuable things in that book to help you.
That's fantastic, because it's not about like entrepreneurship, building a business. It's not just about coming up with your operations, coming up with your, you know, your, it's also building your team. It's also building leaders within your team. And those resources are important.
Yeah. And also building yourself as a leader. And it starts with the premise that is now well founded in science, is that leadership is a choice. It is not, you're not born a leader. And sometimes younger people think, oh, you have to be extroverted. You have to be sort of cutthroat. You have to be that kind of person or that. You can be a quiet leader. You can be an introverted leader. You can be a data driven. You can be all kinds of different leader in terms of your style. But first you make that choice. And it's a lot about self-awareness and discovery. So that's where leadership begins.
That's true. That is so, I love that. And I love the way you framed it. It always starts with you. Everything really, like everything flows out, what you do in life, how you do it in business, how you run your business. If you cannot lead yourself, you cannot lead others. You cannot make leaders if you do not make a leader out of yourself first. That is fantastic. I love also the way that you framed when you said that not all leaders have to be extroverts. Not everyone has to be outgoing. It's such a healthy view, especially for young and upcoming leaders, to see that there is a mold that they can fit, that it's not always, you know, conventional. It's not always anyone can be a leader, basically. I love that. I love that you are part of that voice, part of that change coming and inspiring the ones upcoming. Libby, this is a bit of a tangent, but we need to talk about that Daruma doll. How does it relate to the leadership? Tell the audiences about it.
I'm going to grab it and hold it up here for you. This is my Daruma. I mentioned I had a somewhat chaotic upbringing. I went to 6 different high schools, including 2 in my senior year, a lot of travel. One of those schools was in Japan, and I learned a lot. It sort of caught fire with me, a lot of the Japanese principles of things like Kaizen and you know, all of those sorts of things. And I discovered this Daruma doll, which, as you well know, Joshua, not that many people do. When you buy your Daruma, either for yourself or to gift to someone, those big eyes are blank. You set an intention and you color in one eye. Yes. When it comes to fruition, when you realize that goal, you color in the other eye. Well, I got mine when I was 15.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, I want a, this guy has traveled the world with me. I wanted a happy family, a pretty house, and a good job. You know, it's kind of broad, but that's what I wanted. And when I hit 40, I thought, I'm going to color in that other eye. I think I'm kind of there. And then I sort of stopped. And instead of coloring it in, I just put a little pinprick and then thought, wait a minute, I'm not finished yet. Right. And since that time, I'm over 40, so many other things have transpired. And to me, the message is, it's continual evolution. It's continued growth. You know, there are some people that, you know, I'm done. I am baked. This is who I am and who I'm going to stay. You're not one of those people. I'm not one of those people. Your listeners are not among those folks. We are the ones who are always wanting to learn and grow and develop and risk and try new things. And that's what my Daruma doll, I take him when I speak to companies or organizations. And that's usually my, my wrap up story and call to action that
that's
here,
fantastic.
What is the goal you are setting? And what action will you be taking as soon as you leave this conference?
That's beautiful. That's really beautiful. And that if that isn't what life is about, always constantly changing, always constantly improving, stories never quite end, do they? To relate it just a little bit, we spoke about it earlier. I have a tattooed on my leg, and I haven't quite tattooed in the other eye. I thought about it so many times, but then I always came to a point where I'm like, My story's not finished yet. The same way that you were saying that it's not quite, it changes. Goals change, perhaps. Life changes us, perhaps. And I understand that part of your message, like you said, part of your call to action, part of the last message that you want to say, is like career change is always possible and it's always empowering. And it relates to our Daruma doll. How do you help individuals overcome that, though? Because there's always a resistance, there's always a fear considering a career change. What are some steps you recommend, basically, to change that and to come into a successful transition?
Right. If we simply understand that is a natural reaction, that is our survival system kicking in.
Right.
We're not
right.
running from a predator like in caveman days, but we are triggered in the same way by taking a risk. You know, raising your hand at a meeting and speaking up is a risk. All of those things. And we, that's what stops us. We think, oh gosh, this is the one that's going to do me in. But if people, my sort of work mantra or maybe life mantra is if you recognize that that's a natural reaction, but you can get past it and simply clarify your vision of work and life, clarify the vision. Simplify the pathway, get the time wasters, the wrong people out of the way, bring in the right resources, and then finally execute the plan. It's great to have big ideas and dreams, but you've got to then move forward on them. And to me, that's sort of the simple and the difficult, the challenge of life
is to
do those things. Yeah.
Well, isn't that such a simple set of steps that for anyone can just follow? I mean, it is empowering, but also you have to execute first. You know, you have to kind of, you have to take those first steps. And thank you for those really simplified steps. I'm sure the audience and listeners will love that. We need to clip that. Actually, I think that was a nice clip. I put that in my notes. Libby, you've been really fantastic. Your broadcast experience has really shined through. I'm hoping I'm giving you justice in this interview. You are giving us so much, but I always like to kind of start wrapping up the interviews in this way, in such that, what is the future for leaders? Or in other cases, what is the aspirations for Libby Gale? What is the future for you? What would you like to do?
Well, I'm on my third career here. I'll show it to you. Third career right now. I decided, you know, it was, I always wanted to, I've always been a writer, but wanted to tell stories, have fun and write fiction. And during COVID, I pulled out a novel I was working on. I finished it. I sold it to Random House. And there it is.
Wow.
It will be out in May. It's called Malibu Summer. So it was like, I'm taking a big chance. I'm putting in a lot of time. I don't know if this is going to happen or not, but I'll give it a shot. And it's, you know, and it happened.
And it's happened. It went out there. Oh, my goodness. Libby, I you saw my reaction. I love that because I've always been a fiction reader. I've always been a fan. And I just felt like jumping into fiction. Not that, you know, like nonfiction is difficult, but I feel like jumping into fiction is an entirely different monster.
And different world.
That exactly different than you doing that transition, making that jump is all the more motivating. So Libby, how are you looking at the future of leadership? How are you looking at influencing and coaching leaders and executives? How do you want to experience and influence this change in everyone?
I think for people to understand that the pace of change in everything, in technology, in the financial world, in climate, in geopolitics, the pace of change is accelerating. So wrap your head around this, Joshua. The velocity we're feeling today may be the slowest pace you will ever experience again.
Oh, that's lovely.
We're never going to slow down. It's going to continue. Mm-hmm. So that's we have to, in a sense, arm ourselves. We have to prepare. We have to be ready and recognize this is the world we live in. It's not necessarily a bad thing, although it can be scary. Yeah. So be prepared to flow with that, to know that change is accelerating and see that as opportunity.
Wow, that's lovely. We got ourselves another clip. That was lovely. Libby, thank you so much. I'd like to give you this opportunity to let us know, where can we find you? Where can we connect with you? Where are you most active? Instagram, LinkedIn, and where can we find all your books?
Oh, well, you can go to my website, which is LibbyGill.com, or my new author site, LibbyGillBooks.com. All my information is on my website. If you email me, I love to hear from people, especially if they say, I saw you talking to Joshua. I'd love to always respond. And, and that's where they can find me.
That's fantastic. That's beautiful. I invite our audience and listeners, of course, to go check that out. Go to LibbyGill.com. And if you've got yourselves the time, you make sure you find the time, check out LibbyGillBooks.com. Make sure to find her fiction. I will check that out myself. I'm very curious. And I couldn't thank you more or couldn't thank you enough for being with us here today, Libby. Thank you for your insight. Thank you for your wisdom. And thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Joshua, for your great questions and conversation and for your energy.
Thank you so much. And for our audience and listeners, see you in the next one.
All right, so here's the thing. We try to get a little bit better every day, but we can't do it without you. So if you like the video, make sure to like and subscribe below. And if you have any comments, just leave them in the space under.